You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by Football Stadium Prince. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
Oliver,
goal! It is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Week one is down. Two-thirds of the glass is full, in my opinion, friends. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I am your host, John Bizworm, and alongside me, as always, is the Nate Morales. Nate, week one in the books, and man, how great is it to have soccer back this summer, kicking off this year's version of the Murder Circus?
Dude, the floodgates opened on our soccer season, and now that we're over that initial shockwave, yeah, right. It's just time to kick up your feet, John, and enjoy a nice float through the season on the wonderful soccer flood.
This week, you'll get an idea of how we're going to make all this stuff work this season with new features and coverage and all the things we talked about last year for all things Crows on this year's show. But we'll start this week with a UPSL recap and preview. Then we'll hit up the MPSL recap analysis preview. And finally, another analysis preview of our third arm, the USL 2.
Yeah, and but before we start, John, I want to really quick get your take on the big news. Fall of 2023 looks to be the first year in how long that
ever
you might not be playing a FIFA soccer game on your console. How excited are you?
Yes.
What are you thinking about?
Yeah, the news that that EA Sports and FIFA have broken up. They're moving on to the next hottest thing, which is who knows. My worry, though, Nate, and we're gonna have to have a larger segment to talk about this, but my worry is that the licensure for through FIFA for the team's image and likeness is going to maybe start to be the issue, and I don't want this game to go the way of Pro Evo and how great Pro Evo was, and then all of a sudden they started losing names, teams, colors. I mean, we saw it already with Juventus in FIFA, and what was it, Calico FC or whatever they were called? You know, and I don't want to see that happen where you have maybe a whole league that they don't have access to, or a confederation that you know, you don't have, like, you can't play with the US, try to get into a World Cup, like stuff like that. So we'll talk about this more at length in the coming months here as we move into the new installment of EAFC.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's going to be one of those things that, like, FIFA is going to have to make a pretty... EA was smart this year in that they rolled out custom clubs and career modes. So there's some people that they'll keep. I think they've got their ultimate team, you know, loyalists on lock. It's just a matter, like you said, like how true to life is ultimate team going to still be if you can't include... Mm-hmm. You know, Champions League, you can't include the Europa Cup, things like that. And then does that matter to people? So
right.
I don't know. We'll see.
Man.
Yep. John, the UPSL season opener is probably the most UPSL game that we will experience in this season, as you and I, you joined me and we sat for like 10 minutes additionally at the beginning of the game while the refs worked something out with the opposing Brooklyn Knights. Not really sure what was going on, but I have a feeling it had to do with the handwritten roster on the back of an envelope that they were trying to pass off as official. but once we got underway, it became evident that this league, I think this is the UPSL is going to be a decent test for our young futures prospects.
Yeah. So a couple takeaways for me. One, they're playing against grown ass men. We knew that. We talked about the preview. The things that work in youth soccer did not work for some of the players, for the Crows. But overall, this is a quality preparation for all the next levels that these players are going to play in. We talked about that as a positive in our preview show last week. But at the end of the day, it's still just soccer, Nate. And typically what works everywhere in soccer also works in this league. And typically what bites you in the ass in other leagues and levels bites you in the ass at this level. So it's an interesting mix of all of that and a great first start for the young Crows.
Yeah, I think so. Overall, you and I were a little surprised. It felt like a really defensive battle. Mm-hmm. City's attack seemed to be stifled pretty well by the Knights' big men in the back, and you know they had one attack route. You know, their frequent long balls kind of down the middle, really gobbled up by Nick Kent and future center back Tyler Beaupre. And that was kind of the run of the game for majority of the time. And it really wasn't until the 86th minute. And you called it was funny. You said, as he walked up to the ball, you were like, oh, he called the midfielder off because the midfielder doesn't have the leg for this. Nick Kent stands over a free kick and puts the ball on a dime to Loic Msanvi on the back post. He knocks it down in a crowd and he bounces it into the top netting, kind of off the keeper from point blank range. And that's the only goal of the night. Really exciting for Loic to get on the scoreboard early. And I think good for the organization to get a goal out of him in his second straight competitive match. Mm-hmm. 1-0. Game was pretty much over and we felt good about this W.
As far as Loic goes, there's a reason, Nate, that clubs at higher levels pay the big bucks for three types of players: a good goalkeeper, a quality center back, maybe two, and guys that can put the ball in the fucking goal.
Yeah.
And Loic is clearly one of those special types of players that, regardless of the stage, it's business as usual for him inside 35 yards. And he's consistently hunting down ways to score goals. It might look like he's taken out of games for certain periods, but he's working his way towards that opportunity and then trying to seize it. As a result of this, you can see how special he is as a player and how vital he is to not just his team, but the club. For the UPSL side, given that he has that specific skill set and is proven to be a goal scorer against all levels of competition, for this team, until there's another member of the player pool that can step up and either be a strike partner with him, a la the Schwartz, Ullman, Nikowski show from last summer, or that can show that they can do it all themselves up top alone in the offense, it's going to be very much a ride or die situation with Loic, I think. Or the staff is going to have to find other ways to sprinkle in goals, whether it be set pieces, whether it be, you know, adjusting formations. But for Loic, some might look at this as like, wow, what a big ask for a freshly turned 18-year-old. I don't disagree with that, but sometimes there's this special type of player that has that fuck it attitude on the field where they just do their thing and the weight of the ask or the magnitude of the situation literally means nothing to them. It's just see goal, score goal.
Yeah. And it feels like that's what he does. In this game, we want to focus on a couple of standout performers besides the week though, John, and who in your mind, as we were watching the run of play, were the guys that we really owed this victory to besides the striker?
I think you can talk about the central back pairing, but for me with Beaupre and Nick Kent, but for me it goes Nick Kent and then his partner on the left side, Alvaro Arce. I thought that the two of them in the back were just rock solid. Like every time there was an aerial attack, Nick Kent gobbled it up. He was sure on the ball when he got it on his foot, made some good passes, line breaking passes, trying to find that midfield that was kind of, I think, the weak spot for the team. Alvaro on the outside locked down, I think, that their best striker. He had to move to the other side where Ish Simmons then locked him down, but Alvaro was getting up the field. And I think Carter Hermanson, former Mr. Soccer from Holy Angels this year, just like the next version of Will Kidd, in my opinion. Like,
wow, okay,
super active on the ball, gets forward, invites contact, doesn't get knocked off the ball, will track back, fight for everything, like just constant engine running, similar body style. I think he was really the true bright spot in the attack all day, even though Luik stole the show scoring that goal.
Well, next up for the Young Crows is Valora FC. That is one of the teams in the Midwest West who have gotten off to a hot start. We are the one of the only teams that have only played one game. Valora has played three, and they've racked up 9 points, and they played them all in 1 week. So over the course of that time, they've put up 7 goals. Pretty impressive, but you never know with the UPSL. The talent level is kind of up and down, so who knows what they ran into. But I think Valora might be a better test of our young talent than last year's title contenders, Brooklyn.
Talk about UPSL things.
Yeah, like right.
Playing 3 games in 1 week. So
I thought maybe like we made, I thought like I'd made a mistake. Like, did I miss a game? Did
no,
has the
no,
UP, have the Young Crows played two?
No, Valora's played three and we played one. Valora is a proven commodity in Minnesota soccer scene, whether it's the MASL or in the UPSL since its inception. They've historically been very strong and developed names like Mark Bokeen, Ibsa Hamid, Lionel Vang, names that are familiar around our circles, and current future standout who I mentioned, Alvaro Arce, among a few names. So they have had the pedigree. Last season, I felt they took a step back and were underperforming in the league, which was not typically them. So maybe they were going through some turnover or whatnot, but they have reloaded and are clearly on the front foot. Former Mr. Soccer and UW Milwaukee standout, Suad Sulejic. I'm bad with names. Suad is in the side this year, which is a massive get for them. He spent some time with us in the fall, but chose to play with Valora. And he's been their guy. I think he's contributed to 4 or 5 goals already in the young season. So for the future, this will be the date for their toughest test, which I think might be a run of a few tough tests for them. But look for them to clean up some of the mistakes they made in game one and look to stay maybe more organized in a defensive show and possibly hit on a counter a tad bit more early on in this match to kind of be a little bit safer. And then hopefully what that'll do is it'll open things up a little bit for the midfield. Cause like I said, I thought the midfield struggled a bit against Brooklyn, like keeping the ball, hanging on to it a little bit, you know, 1-2 touch too many, and getting closed down quick. But I really do think that can open up if you can get the ball forward faster to someone like Luik and kind of like take the top off the defense with his speed.
Sure. Well, City is 100% away this week. So if you want to check the futures out, you can head to Burnsville High School on Sunday. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff against Valora FC. Get down there and support the Young Crows.
So on Saturday, the next installment of the Crows, the MPSL team, started their title defense with their conference crown high on their head. In my opinion, which was the most important match of the week for the club versus our old friends, the Minnesota Twin Stars, returning to the league after their brief COVID hiatus. And Nate, this one got changed to Minnetonka High School, which is perfect for this guy.
Nice.
It's literally a stone toss from my house. So I packed up the kids, took in this one live. The murder circus was in full force, heavy contingent from the citizens. A bunch of parents were out there that made the trip across town. There were probably about, I think if I count 8 senior players that were featuring the next day for the USL2 side that came out to support their pals. So it was a really good atmosphere. I would say a 4-to-1 ratio of City fan to Twin Stars fan. One quick note besides the late shift in location, I will say this was by far the least Twin Starsy matchup of all the Twin Stars matchups. There wasn't really any, there wasn't really like any technical difficulties or tomfoolery. They played hard and under control. No biting incidents. And lastly, our old friend Kareem did feature, and he is every bit the quality player that we've seen in the past.
That's great. So the way that the game went for City, John, Cole Schwartz opened his account on the season. He got City's first goal on the night. Talk about how that unfolded since you were there and what it means to see him maintain that goal-scoring form that he had last year from the UPSL.
Honestly, there's not much really to say other than this was totally a Cole goal. which is what he does. It was not a situation where he got the ball, created something himself, or went on an amazing run with the ball. He did what he does best, which is read how kind of an attack is unfolding, find that advantageous position within around the box, and then find the back of the net. There was no real question, or there was a real question coming out of into the summer last year, during the UPSL lead up, could Cole continue his goal scoring prowess from Division III soccer and apply it to high level amateur game, which he did, and then it was, could he elevate to the MPSL level where players are a bit stronger, teams are a bit better, and he has now in his first match. So it's like he continues to level up based on the given situation. And I know those were some question marks for some people to see, like, can he do it? And I think for a team that is really trying to show people that we're not forgetting about the NPSL, that it's still a focus for us. I know a lot of folks think that we're kind of ripe for the picking here. Cole's the type of guy that we're going to have to lean on to be able to get that goal, an early goal, or score a scrappy one to bring us back from a situation that's a little sticky. So it was really great to see him start off that way.
I think it's important too to say, like, a player like Cole who can continually improve, like, never really been the most flashy dude, is, for me, within the organization, more impactful and more important than someone who can show up. Like Tim Wills, or even like Will Kidd, as we say. Like, when you think about a player that started at one level and then continued to level up his game as he got older and older and older and got more wily and got to be more of a veteran, I think it's better than someone who can come in and look really flashy and great for half a season, get injured, and we never see him again.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. So Loic, however, as we already talked about him, he made an appearance in this game as well as a substitute, and he had an immediate impact, doubling City's lead in the 83rd minute. I'm not going to, speaking of guys who you can't, like, just show up and make them and are super flashy and do amazing things, like, you can't expect the guy to score in literally every game he appears in, John, but, like, that's 3 for 3. Damn, if there's a guy that could do it, like, unbelievable at this point.
Well, there isn't much I can really add to that, Nate. We talked about how important he is to the club, and you're right. He can't be expected to go like a full 90 score and score goals like every week. But, I said it's what he does. So he did what he does. For the NPSL team, however, and potentially maybe even the USL2 team, his job at the senior level will not be to shoulder the load up top. There are other guys that are slotted in to do that. But when a game's getting stretched and the chips are down, it can be expected from him that his job is going to go in and do what he does best for a half or quarter of an hour and provide that help and maybe get that goal. So I think that, like, yes, it would have been great to be like, hey, Loic, come play against the Des Moines Menace again and score a goal and score and go 3 for 3. Yeah, that would have been nice, but obviously you got a load balance. Like, you can't expect them to do it all. And also the players that on the senior roster, they're there for a reason to do their job. So you can't just keep throwing the kid in there, even though he is performing. But I do feel like there's a role for him to lean on. As far as the goal, it was a great finish, where he had to elude two defenders, an onrushing goalkeeper, kind of go around the goalkeeper. But we cannot forget to mention that new crow Jorge Pacheco, the soon-to-be St. Thomas Tommy and former youth Mexican international, he entered the fray for Coach Campoverde when the game was starting to get ratcheted up to spell Midu, who was slotted to play or to be part of the USL side the following night. So this was his first live action where I was able to see him play other than training. And man, this guy is going to be exciting. Being that he's only 19, he was super active off the ball, tracking back and stifling out some attacks. Then on the offensive side, in one instance, was able to take killing off of an attack and transition it into a counterattack. But on the goal, He had an opportunity perhaps go on his own, but instead he did the smart thing where he just picked up his head and saw that Loic was in a good spot. But the ball had to be perfect, and it was a peach of a ball, man. It was right in the path of Loic. It split the defenders that were kind of crowded around Loic, had the proper weight. And if it didn't have that proper weight, it would have been eaten up as this kind of a waste long ball by one of the defenders or that on-rushing goalkeeper. So I actually think that the ball that Jorge played was actually more spectacular than Loic's finish, even though that was pretty top-notch as well.
What, John, what did the Twin Stars offer in the form of an attack? Like, you know, 0-2 feels like City defense and goalkeeper Troy Luigi did a pretty good job, but were there any players of note that we should keep an eye on when the return fixture comes around?
One quick note. Well, I'll get to that. They were a, you know, how do I put this? There were bits of like the per usual for a team like them in the early stages of the summer when their college players that they typically lean on for depth aren't there yet. So it was kind of hard for me to say more than this is than just like Kareem Darbaki, you know, that we should technically watch out for. They did deploy Mark Fokine as a wing back. And I thought that actually that was the poorest choice for a player like Mark. I think that they would have gotten more out of him and probably more out of Kareem if he had more options going forward to play the ball to, and Mark can do that, but they had him playing an outside wing back, which was interesting. But this team, Nate, will once again live and die by the way of Kareem Darbaki's gifted left foot. He was the show. Nice. You know, he was the spark that started all the attacks. But in this installment of the Twin Stars, like I mentioned, they don't have assets like the Oliver twins who are just like eagerly moving off the ball all the time for him. And most times than not, it was side to side or backwards passing for him. When he did go forward, it was like through the long ball, and the City back line was basically Orser and Jack Berry were just waiting for long balls and just eating them up and getting them out wide to Sydney Toome or to Matt Murakami and starting attacks. So like, I didn't see anyone outside of Green, to be honest with you, but that doesn't mean that like on an
yet. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I mean, we talked about it for the UPSL. Let's talk about it for the NPSL. Any standout performers in this game for you, John? I think you already mentioned a couple guys that like Jorge that were really getting the attack going, but you know, as far as controlling the whole game and affecting the whole game, who'd you attribute that kind of stuff to?
The starting off of the center back pairing of Jack Berry and Will Orser, I thought they continued to grow on their continuity together from the preseason into the season. I thought they were great. They were good on the ball. They handled all of the long attacks very well. But for me, the standout performer was Samo Ruiz Plaza. He not only had to put in the shift on the offensive end, but he was the one who was more times than not defending against Kareem, and his pressure early on Kareem was forcing him into that side to side backwards passing where you don't want him to turn, because when he turns, he's already got you. So I thought, I honestly have never seen Samo play that well of a defensive game before. And he's been around for a long time. So I think that was a huge thing. And he was really the heartbeat that kind of kept the ball moving for City throughout the midfield. So I would say he was spectacular. And he did really well pairing with Joey Tawa and Abai in the middle. So they had a really good kind of push and pull complementary lever tip situation.
Sweet. Well, next up for the City in the NPSL is a trip on Saturday to Duluth to play Duluth FC. John, Duluth is still full. They got to still be feeling full from feasting on Joy Athletic in a 6-0 rout in St. Louis Park. On one hand, that's an eye-opening scoreline that could get people's anxiety fired up. But on the other hand, it is Joy Athletic, who should probably at this point be desperate for any help that they're going to get in the form of college kids who are coming back. Not a good start to the season for them. I want to ease our worries first. Last year, we talked about this a little in the booth on Sunday. Last year, I asked the question if Joy would be the new heiress. I was looking at the program. I know the program pretty well. Young guys, all basically kids from the Joy system. Felt like in the NPSL, that could be a tough way to compete. But I think when you add a guy like Emmanuel Iwe in the mix, a few standout college kids that had come back to Joy, you know, had kind of played with them in their very, very young days and then left and now came back to play for Ted. I think Joy was able to compete. Obviously, they beat us one. You know, they split the series with us. So very, very well. They did very well in their first season. This year, John, Iwe is with Minnesota United next. They lost their starting center backs to St. Croix, I think. Is the talent at Joy this year a case of, like, it's just the most loyal players are what's left? Do you think they lost too many players to greener pastures in the offseason? Players that wanted to play USL 2, players that maybe wanted to play at a higher level than they had seen, that sort of thing? I mean, they ended up bringing on 3 16-year-olds against Duluth. Like, the depth might not be there for them.
Well, and a 38-year-old.
I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but... I think we can make some logical analysis here that, like, if what you've got is a starting lineup that is pretty much the same as last year, minus 3 or 4 of your most impactful players, and the way to replace them is to pull 16-year-olds that played in the winter on your futsal team up, like, it might be a tough NPSL season.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you're just throwing out the Star Wars at the trap meme on me here. yeah, you're trying to get me in trouble. I'm not going to speak on how they do things over there. That wouldn't be fair. And lean more on the game that I watch. But what I will say is last year on this very show, we ended the year talking about how well they did in certain areas. You talked about the guys leaving. Those are big shoes to fill, in my opinion. However, they did have some growing pains learning how this league works last year and how to be successful in it, like not leaking goals at the worst possible times ever. And this is not me, like, spouting off here. This is, like, fact. You can go and watch the games. So they had those growing pains on how to learn how to be successful in this league. We talked about it. Like, we went through those and we were hoping, like, they learned from, like, us in some aspects, but learned from what they saw with their own two eyes. Duluth in that game showed them for 90 minutes the difference between a talented youth movement and an experienced side with tactical fluidity to change things up and expose weaknesses. That was exactly like that. Mm-hmm. Is if you looked up this game in an encyclopedia, that would be how it'd be described.
Yeah, and I, you know, John, I'll say, like, I know a lot of those kids still on the Joy team. I think, you know, you and I talked about a kid like Bennett Kwame is super talented and is going to do great things next year at St. Thomas. So I hope that they do start to learn from what's going on in the NPSL and tactically make those adjustments. But, like, you know, from what you saw, what some of our scouts saw, at least last weekend, that's a tough way to start the season. As for Duluth, I think we need to respect them. Like, defensively, this team is basically intact from last year. Daly is back in goal, still very good. Starling back at center back, might not be back from school yet, but he's on the roster. Midfield-wise, I think it's a rebuilding year. So even though early in the season, this might not be exactly the same Duluth that we're used to seeing, they will still play like Duluth. There's that Ukrainian midfielder, Konstantin Domorodsky. That guy looks to be a beast. This dude, Blake Perry, came through with a respectable tally of 2 goals. And then there's other attackers on the roster that we're going to recognize. Aaron Pike, Sam Thornton, Diego Valley, new guy Jesse Juarez, I think, all should be respected. So on one hand, Duluth is probably still the team to keep an eye on for us in the NPSL North title race. However, there are plenty of things in City's favor. Last year, Duluth beat Joy 5-2, and I think something like 6-2 as well. So I'm not going to let that scoreline from Saturday worry me too much. And also, we don't really know what kind of roster the coaches will send to Duluth versus, like, a Peoria. And we do know that this Duluth game is one in the NPSL North schedule to take seriously. So, like, Peoria, which we'll talk about in a second, might be another, like, very young college age team relying a lot on Bradley players. Do we send more veterans, more talent to Duluth to make sure we've got that game on lock and just see what Peoria throws at us? I don't know. What are your thoughts on how this matchup could play out?
Well, one, we'll talk about Peoria, but they have no players from Bradley, just so you know that.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that in a bit. But as far as this game goes, I also do not take the 6-0 scoreline personally and take much away from it from a usefulness standpoint as far as a scouting report goes. Other than Duluth's coach, Sean Morgan, made a significant tactical call in the first 3 minutes of the game to exploit Joey's decision to play three at the back, which is a very odd choice. I don't know if that was a personnel decision, but if you're going to try to outgun Duluth, their front three historically, no matter what names you throw in there, whether it's the Watts of the past, or it was the Sydney Wardens of the most recent past, or Blake Perry of the future here, you don't play three at the back. You play with four at the back. And they quickly made that that change back to four after the damage was already done. So hats off to Coach Sean Morgan for making that tactical change. I was well aware of the players that they brought in this year, whether it's through my recruiting trail for the USL2 or the MPSL, but it's a healthy mix of returning players that I feel Nate had some really good quality last year. Then you mentioned a few of them, and they did a really decent job of replacing three key areas due to loss. And in my opinion, that's outside wide, centrally, and of course, up top with the loss of Golden Boot winner Sydney Warden. They brought in Blake Perry, who you mentioned. He's the all-time leading goal scorer in UW Superior history.
Oh, wow.
He showed that in this game and was actually slotted in to be in our MC2 setup last year, but chose to stay at school and prepare for his senior year. So, again, well aware of what they brought in. This game for me, Nate, in my opinion, it goes down for me to tactics. There is and has always been quality on both sides of the field for both of these teams. So it won't be one-way traffic for sure. Where the difference has been in the recent past, and when I say that, I mean after 2017, is the success and the success in this battle goes down to being able to adapt team structure and find alternative ways to go after each other. This has been something that has gone the way of the Crows most recently and could be due to the fact that each year City starts the foundation of their summer season and their strategy building in December, where Duluth starts in April and early May. And what that does, it limits how quickly you can install plan B, C, or D. Mm-hmm. So there's no fault in that for Duluth. It is what it is. But for City, it's a strength. Like we have a deeper player pool too, historically. So you can deploy different players. You can deploy different tactics. You can try one thing. If it doesn't work, quickly go to another thing. Where Duluth hasn't really been able to do that in the past. I already mentioned on this show though, the tactical adjustment Morgan made versus Joy was the absolute right one. And it might be the indicator that they have been drilling in different things in their short time together. I don't know, but I see this game as your classic City versus Duluth battle, which is what every NPSL North fan wants.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I think if you remember last year, like it looked dicey for City early as we gave up that early goal. And it really wasn't until Duluth goes down to 10 men that we were able to.
And didn't make a tactical adjustment to make up for that. And then six goals happened.
Exactly.
So,
I'm excited and nervous as well to see this game. It's going to be Saturday night, but there's another game Saturday night, John.
Yeah. So you mentioned it, Nate. While the MPSL team travels to Duluth, the USL2 team will head to Peoria, Illinois, home of Bradley University. The Curls will be hoping to rebound from the opening weekend loss against defending national champions, the Des Moines Menace. You can listen on our channel to Kyle Eliason's game recap for all the detailed information about the game. But I'm going to flip the script here a bit, Nate. What was your take on the match?
Oh, man. Okay. Wow. So I think for me, I was really happy with the talent level that City was able to deploy against Des Moines. I thought that was one of the things I was interested to see is what Des Moines looked like at the start of the season and how we would match that and what we would do. Like, we know that talent wise, we weren't too different from what we were in the Open Cup, and we couldn't really plan for what Des Moines was going to put out there. So we just kind of played City's game, and I thought that was great. I mean, I thought I was really impressed with our midfield. I think Aiden did a really good job, kind of holding down that hybrid eight role, being able to defend, being able to move forward a little bit when things needed to be advanced. I was happy to get a first glimpse of Martin Sanchez. I thought he looked really good. He made a couple of really nice saves keep it 0-0. So that was good. But I think for me, it was, I just didn't think City had any, it kind of reminded me of the Cleveland game last year. You know, mm-hmm. we had one or two chances that were close, and that was about all we had as far as offensive tests for Des Moines. So I would like to see more offense out of this USL2 team moving forward.
Yep, I would agree with that. My take is that this game went down to two mistakes. The foul by O'Driscoll that led to the free kick that went in, and the midfield three not tracking back up a guy, and a midfielder from Des Moines waltzing in unmarked on a rebound. That was it. It was two key mistakes. What killed us against them in the Open Cup? Two key back-to-back mistakes. So kind of the same thing. I thought that the offensive movement has to be better. That was very stagnant. When we did get the ball, we did what we do best, and that's keep the ball. I thought we held possession well, but it was just the dynamic runs that we need made up top against this type of high-level defense that we need something to unlock that, and there wasn't anything there. Also, the killer attitude. I know there were some technical and some personnel adjustments that were made by the coaching staff when we went up a guy to be able to try to counter that. But for me, it falls onto the players. Like there were two times, or more times than not, when we had the ball in their offensive third, we still had three and four players in the back line sitting back and guarding one guy, maybe zero guys. And it's, you don't need four support players. You might be at that point being down a goal and then two goals, you need either two or one, depending upon what the score line is. You don't need to bunker down in the back and be safe when you have to score goals. So I think that's on the players, like recognize the situation. At that point, every time Des Moines got the ball and every time, really anytime we got the ball or they got the ball, it had to be a two-on-one battle in our favor. So two defenders closing down one guy from the menace, or two attackers going at one defender for the menace. And we didn't see that. So the players have to like wake up a little bit there. My last thing is that we can play with these guys. Like that was not the question at all. Like it wasn't like it wasn't a 6-0 one way trip here.
And at no point did it feel like we were scrambling to stay in this game or anything like that. It did not feel like desperate measures, and we were just hanging on, and we were lucky to give up two goals. I mean, like you said, like that first goal off the foul and the free kick was basically their answer to Wenger's only. And one mistake led to the second. It just was too bad. We couldn't take advantage of our man advantage.
Yeah, we absolutely. And like, so you can look at this as an L, but I think it's also a little W. Like we showed that we can play, and everything I mentioned on the broadcast is totally fixable. So is Des Moines going to get stronger as the summer goes on? You better believe it. Is Minneapolis City going to get stronger as the summer goes on? That too. So I think it was a great start. It showed the guys, like some of the guys I know maybe were a little nervous, like this is a different stage, a little jump up for certain players. I thought they played well. And again, everything's fixable.
Nice. Well, John, any standout performers for you in this one? I know we didn't have much in the way of offense, but I felt like there might be someone in the midfield or on defense that you feel you need to recognize.
Well, this guy always gets on me for saying I never say anything nice. so here you go, Mr. Jonah Garcia. Take that. I thought Jonah played fantastic. And he, I think, was one of those players that fell into the camp of like the question mark of like, can they elevate up to the USL2? This is the highest level that Jonah's played against. And he kind of mentioned it in his post-game interview with us on the broadcast. But I thought Jonah played fantastic. I thought defensive positioning, he was locked in. I think on the ball, he was great. Outside of maybe like one or two giveaways, which happened in a game, perfect. His balls advancing and skipping a level through the air, I thought were great. I thought he was constantly looking to find the midfield three. Mm-hmm. But he had his hands full on the other side of the ball with two awesome forwards, like Garcia and I think it was Kingsford, or Langenthorpe or I forget what the other guy's name was, but the two strikers that they had, even after they had to take Garcia off for the red card, because of the red card, I thought they can cause players fits. And I thought they did a really great job. Jonah did a really great job working with Tyler, figuring out how to pass those guys off, not losing track of guys. And really was my standout guy for sure.
Yeah. I mean, talk about a guy, we mentioned it earlier with Cole, but talk about a guy who is able to continually elevate his game, no matter what level he plays at with this club. I think Jonah has been really, really hungry to play at this USL 2 level. Ever since the announcement was made that we are going to go up, and you can tell that he's been working on the offseason to be that rock in the defense and that kind of everyday starter for us. That's great. Well, the rubber has not hit the road for Peoria City SC this year, whatever they're called. So for a new club, we're going to be their test run. We're going to hit the road for the first time in the USL 2 season. It's going to be one of our, we're not used to road trips like this. So it'll be a good warm-up for the ones that we have to take all the way up to Winnipeg and stuff. But what do we know about Peoria, John? We haven't seen them yet. They haven't played. They're brand new like us.
Not necessarily brand new like us, brand new here with us. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
So their roster currently looks a little thin with 18 players total, but that doesn't mean that as of this recording, more players have not been added. So who knows on that front as far as personnel goes. But what I do see are some big name colleges, Nate, from the players that they do have at their disposal for their first ever match. No Bradley folks, like I mentioned, but you see the names like Marquette, Providence, Boston College, New Hampshire, Vermont, just to name a few, plus a couple of really high level Division II schools. So the pedigree's there, but how are they going to deploy? We don't know, but don't we get them three times this year?
Yes, we do. Three times. Yep. Two home and one away.
So we're going to get a good idea of what we're up against this week. But again, like I mentioned before, year one in the USL 2, we want to be competitive. It'd be great to win the conference. If Des Moines does not get stronger, I absolutely believe that we might be able to catch a heater and do some damage potentially. But each game will be a new learning curve to understand, a feeling out process, so that we can go into next year and we know kind of what to expect a little bit more. But for the club, like you talked about, as we've learned, it's really hard to start a soccer club. there's things to think about, things you forget, bumps in the road, both on and off the field. On that end though, I do wish them good luck and a bright future, but on this weekend, I hope we smash them in the face on their debut and we embarrass them.
All right. Well, both the NPSL and the UPSL play on Saturday at 7 p.m. Saturday night. So we're going to throw a dual watch party. You can join us starting at 6:30 at Utapils Brewing. That's $1 off pints for all members while we're there. And you can watch whichever game you want. You can just keep your head on a swivel and go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Yeah. I don't know how I'm going to do it. Sounds like it's going to be a good time. But 6:30 Saturday night, Utapils, the festivities will begin and kick off for both NPSL and USL 2 games. USL 2 games will be at 7. Well, thank you for listening to this week's show, and thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. John, you and I have some brainstorms about some amazing things to bring to the people thanks to Football Stadium Prints. So we're going to be talking to him about that. But in the meantime, guys, if you're in the market for some really great soccer design shirts, mugs, prints, whatever you want, you head over to footballstadiumprints.com and fill up that cart. I'm celebrating the opening of the season by gazing lovingly on my new Edor Nelson Field retro print.
Nice.
And if you follow him on Twitter, you might even be able to get in on that NFT game if that is something you are interested in. Don't forget, when you order online at footballstadiumprints.com, you can use the code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you purchase. And remember, every order ships right here from the United States, so there is no pesky international shipping charges for U.S. customers. All right. Remember that Minneapolis City is a 501c3 organization, so consider making a tax-deductible donation to the club today. If you're interested in getting a hold of the club or the pod, we've made it simple. You can talk to the club on Twitter at MPLSCitySC. You can talk to the show at The People's Pitch, or you can email us mcscpodcast@gmail.com. That's all for this week. I am Nate. That has been John. Game week two. Here we go. We're going to hit the road. So get out to those watch parties, friends, so that we can all
get hoofed together. A hoofing.